Okay, it's a kind of do-it-yourself session. Is the mic working? Yes, it is. We are going to start. It's noisy. Okay, anyway. So, welcome to this presentation. It's working. Perfect. There. Fine. So, I'm going to present you something about how to manage big projects. I guess you are all working on projects. It's quite interesting to have some insight about how we do it at Apache, and in general, we can extend what we learn from Apache to any other project. So first, I tried as much as possible to find free images. I may have missed one or two, but I did my best. And I attributed some images that needed it to be. That's something when you do a presentation, which is quite difficult. You're Googling for images, you find something which is, well, okay, it's well for your presentation, and you put it and you forget about attribution. It's not a good thing to do. Okay, so 1 million line of code. And I guess for many of people, it's scary. I mean, I will never work on a 1 million line project. It's too big for me, and it's too big to fail, whatever. Then you'll see that 1 million line of code, somehow it's going to be huge. I don't know how he does it, but it's going to be huge. And actually, yes, it's quite a huge. Except that you may wonder from your point of view how big are projects nowadays. And actually, projects at Apache are quite big. So first, a quick definition. I'm talking about single line of code. Single line of code is a code that actually does something. That I just don't talk about commands and blank lines, and there are numerals in a piece of code. So that's a way to measure a project. There are tools to do that, like SlowCount. Every tool you are using, like SonarQube or whatever, gives you a number of line of code, and this is slogs we are talking about. Okay, it's just a unit. Forget about it. We are going to go back to it. But remember that it's just lines that does something. So a quick remember about a few Apache projects, and I try to pick the one which everybody knows. I pick Chiro because I know it. I was a mentor of Chiro. Chiro is quite big. It's a bit little. It's only 80,000 line of code. Then HTTPD, everybody knows it. It's nearly 400,000. Tomcat is tangenting now 600,000. And then you have the big boys, OpenOffice, 6 million. Okay? So you can imagine that we have a full spectrum of projects, and I just tried to gather a few of them into a logarithmic graph, and you see that we're very close to 1 million line of code, but except that it's a logarithmic scale. So of course, here is much more like 500 or 600,000 than 1 million. Okay? But you have easily bigger project with 1 million. And Linux, for instance, is probably around 27 or 28 million line of code, like Windows or whatever. So as you can see, even at Apache, 1 million line of code is not that big. It's big, but it's not that big. And even 500,000 is already big. So let's go back a bit when I started to work as a developer back in 1980. Yes, I'm old. Sorry for that. But being old is a good thing because you remember, if you're not too old and Alzheimer start to hit, you remember things about what's going on. And here, this quote is from my teacher who said, okay, you can't manage something that is bigger than 10,000 lines of assembly language, and 25,000 is probably the limit for C program. It probably never worked on Linux. But anyway, that was an interesting quote because it's only 30 or 36 years old, and computers were already all over the planet. And now this is what we can imagine is a big project, you know, with pipe all over, it's complicated and stuff. But the industry can manage it, so there is no reason we can't, because our project is pretty much like this. And those kind of factory produce things, and it works day after day. Think about a nuclear plant. They never explode, almost never. So let's think about what we had in 1980. No ID, you were using Vi and Emacs, and it was a big battle between Emacs lovers and Vi haters and so on. But I mean, when I started, we did not have any IDE except TurboC. We arrived around 1986 and Turbo Pascal, and that was the first very good IDE. You did not add a lot of debugging tools, I mean, except the command line. You were using printf to know what's going on into your code. That was very efficient, trust me on that. You weren't using source control. For those who are old enough, you probably have heard about SCCS and RCS, but it was not very widely used. Integration test, unit test, nobody was using it. I mean, every time you compile your program back then, you had to test it by hand. And you are hoping that it was going to work for the customer. And if your customer find a bug, he call you on the phone and you have to fix it. The customer was your unit test. Right now, with open source software, it's a bit different. The user are doing the unit test, so that's fine. It's much better. Actually, it's a bit different, but we don't add, back then, we didn't add any very good unit test or integration test. Of course, the OS operating system was depending on which machine you were working on. Like you could have VAX VMS, IBM, I don't even remember the name of it, and CPM, Multics, whatever. I mean, every time you change a machine, you change the system. Now it's either Mac, but Mac is a Unix system, or you have Linux, or you can have Windows if you are just crazy. But it's pretty much the same, and even Windows now have a POSIX box, and you can run a VM to be back to your favorite system. We did not have mails back then. Again, it's 1980. Mail existed, but nobody was using it because we didn't have the infrastructure. The only thing I remember, we were using BBS to share some games. That's it. And BBS were through the phone, and it was running at 2,400 bauds when you had money to buy it. Otherwise, it's 120. Okay, then came 2000. And 2000 were interesting for two things. First, of course, the big bug. I remember from a customer that the Easter was not on Monday, it was on Tuesday. Good for him. But most important things, we had internet, and it changed our life. I don't even remember how we did find some documentation before internet. It was crazy. You had to buy books, and books were very expensive. And of course, when you buy the book, as soon as you have bought it, it's obsolete. So internet, it was not even Google back then. It was Yahoo. You were looking for some piece of code, and you found it. And you have a lot of places where you can have discussions and everything. So it changes everything. And of course, open source software. Open source software started a bit before, but with internet, it was much easier. And Apache was started in 1996, blooming in 2000 because of internet and all those startups that were connected to internet, and they were now spreading source and everything very, very widely. So nowadays, again, you have to get used to the fact that a project is really, really big, and 1 million line of code is not that much. It's much easier now to manage 1 million line of code than it was in the 80s. And I will explain why and how we do it. And I will just use a project I'm working on as an example of a big project that is not that complicated to manage. So let's see what your options right now. And this is this direction. So I will talk very quickly about the directory project. I won't tell you what it does. It's not really interesting. I mean, it's not what is this presentation about. But the fact is that it's a big project at Apache. As I said, it could have been Hadoop or whatever, but I'm not working on that. I'm just working on directory. Okay, so Apache directory started in 2003, was promoted to a TLP in 2005. So it's now more than 10 years, and it's still going on. We have had 54 committers working on the project, not at the same time. You have committers that comes and others that leave. That's the way it works, and I'm going to explain how to manage that, okay? So let's see the number of lines for this project. And let's first focus on this number. So the project in single line of code add up to nearly 900,000 lines of code, out of which you have many different sub-projects. And actually, Mina is not the same project. It has been put into a separate top-level project, but it was part of Apache DS at the very beginning. And other projects are a way to split the project in smaller pieces that you can manage. And if you think about it, Apache DS, which is one big piece, it's only 200,000. So now you can see that 1 million lines of code can be split in smaller pieces. Okay, it's not already microservice, but soon. Okay? And I have put also the commands and blanks line, and you see that they are quite important. You have nearly 500,000 lines of commands and a lot of blanks lines. So basically, the project is a bit less than 1 million lines of code, and it's a much more than 1 million lines of code if you add up everything, commands, blanks, and code. So why do we have...
Sorry, yep. Comments, are you including license headers?
Sorry? Yes, of course. And this is part of the important elements you have had to, in your code, because the license is critical for a project. Okay? So, of course, probably one third of those commands are part of the number. Okay? But there is much more important thing in the commands than that. We are coming back to that. Okay? So, two things about commands and lines. And blank line, it's better for your code because it makes it more readable. It's like a newspaper. If you have one newspaper with everything written very, very, you know, without any column or whatever, it would have been way more complicated to read. And actually, 100 years ago, this is how newspaper were looking at. So it was difficult to read. Nobody is reading newspaper now because you have internet, but then. The evolution of newspaper, you have much more picture and big title, etc., because it's better for readability. And commands, as I said, it's not only the header with license, it's for Java code, many Javadoc. And Javadoc, you can consider its documentation, but it's also part of the code, because it explains everything about your API or whatever. So it helps. It helps. It's part of your project. So how do you do, as I said, we have a lot of subcomponents, and the key here is to divide your project in order to be able to manage it in a better way. And how to do division, it's a question of modularizing your code. You will have different pieces. And for directory, here are the pieces. At the bottom, you have the API, which is used by all the other components. And under the API, you have the network layer. And on top of it, you have Apache DS, which is a server based on database. And you have all the client side, which is Studio, it's a GUI. Fortress, it's an API on top of everything. And Directory, which is another client. So you can see that you can easily split your project in smaller integrated pieces. That makes sense. Okay, so let's go now deeper into one part, Apache DS, and how you can also not modularize, but split your project in many layers. And that's a key, again, to when you have some big project, like 200,000 lines of code, it's quite big, you have to split it, slice it in different layers so that it's easier to grab. And here is how it's Apache DS layered. At first, you have the network subsystem. Then under that, you have all the protocol that can be separated. I mean, you can just have DHCP and NDAP, and that's it. But it's a different layer. And then you have the provider, and under that, you have an interceptor chain, which under your request, and at the very bottom, you have the access to the database. So you have different layers, and every layer is connected to the other one with a clear API. So a clear interface. The important key here is that you can remove one piece and work it in isolation and report it as soon as you have modified inside the code, it will still work. Your layers are pretty much independent. At least you should try to do it in a way that it's independent. So now let's focus on the network subsystem. And here is how it works. And again, it's layers on top of layers. You have the service which receives a request, and then you have a chain of filters. Each filter is independent from the other one. And at the bottom, you have your application. Again, it's layers. So at some point, you see that the big 1 million code project is composed of five or six sub-projects. Each sub-project itself is split in different layers, and if each layer, you have again another layer. Okay, makes things a bit complicated, but you can ease the separation by doing by using a plugin architecture. This is where it's interesting, because for two reasons. First, the interface is again clearly defined, and second point, they are isolated from each other. And it helps, for instance, if you have somebody else that is not part of the project who want to work on one specific addition, if it's a plugin architecture, it can do it, and you don't have to deal with that. If you want to provide it to the project, he can. If you want to keep it for himself, it can. But it won't impact you. But you have to think about it. Typically in Apache DS, we use this approach for many different pieces, like control, extended operation, interceptor, backends, whatever. What is important here is to remember that if you can see in your project which part can be a module and which part can be isolated, then you are going to have a better time. The only problem would be integration of all those modules. And you have tools to do that. I mean, at some point, OSGi or even Java 9 that will come maybe next year or in 2 years, or in 5 years, we don't know. It's 5 years we're waiting for Java 9. But OSGi can be a good tool. I mean, we are using it for 5 years now. It's not that easy. It's a bit complex. If you use just for modularization, that's pretty much fine. You can use it for more than just managing modules, like, for example, lifecycle. It's a bit complex, but Eclipse is based on that, and many other projects are using OSGi. I'm not claiming that OSGi is your solution, but think about it, or think about any other plugin solution. That helps a lot. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. With Maven, for instance, now, it makes, you don't have to type your manifest at the by hand. And
just small comment that OSGi in the last years becomes more easy to use because there's a lot of interesting projects and tools like Apache Felix plugin should not basically developer could is you should still care about modularity and model design, but you should not care about details, technical details about OSGi. You shouldn't write manifest itself.
Yeah. The key with OSGi is that your code can't be put into an OSGi framework like that. You have to think about the way you have to design your interfaces, because it's all based on the package name. So be very careful. You have to think about it. But as soon as it works, it's pretty convenient, I have to say. Okay. Now, it was just about Apache directory. I will go a bit about generic information, and I will explain you two things, expose you two things. First, how to manage your code, and second point, how to manage your community. So, what about the code? How do you cope with big piece of code? The first key here is to make it readable for users or for people of the project. Okay, as you can see here is a listing of Scala code. Oh, no, sorry, it's Egyptian hieroglyph. Anyway, the guy who just discovered this big stone, by the way, it's a Rosetta Stone, which is in British Museum. It's written in three languages, and he spent something like many years to understand what it does. And it's written in Egyptian, it's written in Copt, and it's written in Greek. So you have some correspondence. There is some help. But basically, if you have a big piece of code without any documentation about it, it's pretty hard. So make it so that it's possible to read it. You have keys to do that. Remember that you write the code only once, and then many people are reading it. That's a key. If you just write your code for you, nobody will going to help you fix your code. So when you write code, there is some proverb said, write code like if the guy who is going to maintain it is a maniac with a big axe. And that's a key here. Remember, write the code for others, not for you. And same thing, Javadoc is part of the code. write it right away. As soon as you have written your method with parameters, try to write the Java doc. Because if you don't, nobody will do it. And it's extremely painful to come back later and writing the Java doc. Okay, I know that the method is evolving, you're adding parameters, you change the name, so you have to change the Java doc. And who cares? It's better to have an outdated Java doc than no Java doc at all. Another thing that makes code very complicated to read, and I'm reading right now some C code, and I don't know why, but the names of variables are only one or two letters long. It's extremely difficult to know if n is a number or n is for an index. And I'm sorry, I'm not a compiler. I don't have an extended memory. So be careful. Use significant name. Same thing. You have beautiful computers right now. I mean, in the 80s, I just had a VT100. And VT100 is 25 lines by 80 characters. It's over. So here, you can see, there is something more here. But I mean, it's 80 characters limits, but OK. It's going outside. I can squeeze it so that it fits into the screen. The key here, you can augment the number of characters. Typically on a project, we now use 128, but you can use 200 if you want as soon as you have a big screen. And you can buy a big screen for maybe 1,000 euros right now, so it's not very expensive. And don't forget that you don't have to optimize quickly. I mean, just make it work first. You will have plenty of opportunity to optimize your code. As soon as it works, it's already 90% of your business done. A bit of information I get from people working on a GVM, they tell me how they write the JIT compiler. The JIT compiler is the code that takes your code and after a certain number of runs, try to improve it. They have studied thousands and thousands of projects. And they are trying to find patterns. That means code that is frequently used, and they spend a lot of time improving those part of codes. And you can bet that in thousands of projects, the pattern they have found is the pattern written by average coder. That means it's not very smart code, but code which is very frequently used. So if you just try to optimize your code to be very, very smart, etc., the optimizer might miss it. So write an average code. If you have to do a for loop, just write a very simple for loop. That's it. This is what the JIT compiler will optimize anyway. Don't be smarter than the compiler. I mean, it's not helpful. Your code. When you are working on a 1 million project code, you are not likely to have written all of them. So be careful. When you read some code and you find the code is not as beautiful as it should be, maybe it's okay, you can keep it for yourself. You can send a mail, okay, I would not have written it this way, but that's okay. But even that, it's a bit too much. Look at it and forget it. It's not necessarily your code. You can change, modify your code, but don't touch other one code. That's complicated. Even if you just push the code after having modified it, it will be in Subversion, in Git or whatever, and it will be noise, because you are not changing anything, just changing a name, maybe some indentation, whatever. It's useless information for people. They will be flooded by those information, which makes no sense. So keep it safe, don't touch it. Same thing, if you can use a code formatter, that's very good for you. The code formatter will stop those stupid fight about, oh, I like the bracket at the end of my line. Oh, no, I prefer it at the beginning, etc. That's a stupid fight. Don't do it. Same thing for tabs and space. It doesn't make any sense. Use a fucking formatter. It will format everything for you. You won't have to fight for. And of course, you have to agree with your team. I said, don't change the code if not needed. That's the exact reason I just explained before. For commands, that's the same thing. Many people think that command is totally redundant with the code because the code, I mean, it's self-expressing. You just have to read the code and you know what it does. Except that when you read some complicated code, then you will like to have some commands. And the thing that, okay, if the code is complicated, then it's not commands that you have to add, you have to simplify your code. But sometimes it's simply not possible. And a code, you write it into a context. You have an algorithm in your head, and you know how to implement it. But not everyone knows about your algorithm. It's probably interesting to have a single command that said, okay, I'm using this kind of algorithm, and if you want to read about it, just go to Knusbook, for instance. Or you can just explain what you are trying to do. I'm doing this because there is a bug in this component, and it's a workaround. Because 3 years later, when the bug has been fixed, maybe the command doesn't make any sense, but it makes people understand why you have written this kind of code. Plus, if you are working on a big project, it's likely that you are going back to your code that you've written a few years later, and you don't even remember why you did it, because you have a limited memory again. Let's talk about the formatter a bit. As I said, they remove those stupid discussion about space versus tabs, commas, do we have to add brackets before and after if and whatever. Forget all those things. Define a common formatter and use it. You have to use it into your IDE. Be sure that your IDE supports it. And every time you do write some code, don't forget about formatting. Formatting as you like. And when you save, you just have to have the formatter to format the code before it gets pushed into the Subversion system or Git or whatever source control system you are using. A bit more about names. I said you are not a compiler. Memory is not scarce anymore. I have 16 gigabytes on this computer. When I started, I only had 6 kilobytes, and 6 kilobytes, you had to be very careful, and you had to use very small names. On my computer back then, I just have the 6 first digits, which were significant. I mean, names were limited to 6 digits, 6 letters. It's not anymore the case. You can even use, you know, the Mary Poppins name, if you want. Well, okay, it's a bit too long, but at some point, using 1 word or 2 words is much better than 1 letter or 2 letters. You can do that. I mean, seriously, makes no sense to not do it. As soon as your code is written, you might want to use some checkers, code checkers, that detect some mistakes that you have made before it's running. I don't remember how many times I run the checker on my code, or my project code, I should say, it's not mine, and I found that, okay, this variable has not been initialized, and in this specific portion of your code, 109 letters, you are trying to use it, but it will be null. So you will get a null pointer exception in this specific case. It's easy, you just have to use a code checker and you fix it. It's much better than having a customer or a user sending a mail say, okay, I get a null pointer. What the heck? I mean, you can save you a lot of time doing that. Plus, it makes your code more consistent because it will tell you all the rules that have to be followed. Like, for instance, you need to add Javadoc and you forgot to add Javadoc. It's much better than going through all the code by hand and trying to find all the places where you don't have Javadoc and so on. It's 2016, you have to use a decent IDE. I don't care if you prefer Eclipse, NetBeans, or IntelliJ. I don't know I'm using Eclipse because I use it since 2001, but I could use NetBeans, actually. It's an Apache project, it's cool stuff. Okay, it won't have the Java compiler into it, but that's another story. But yes, you can, as soon as you have a decent IDE, as soon as this IDE is supporting your build tool, that's fine. Doesn't matter, you can have a team, and we have a team where people are using Eclipse, other people are using IntelliJ, that works. It's absolutely your problem, it's not the project problem. We have formatter for different aspects, like for IntelliJ, for Eclipse, doesn't matter. Make it simple for people. They are used to use a specific IDE, that's fine. But you should not, using VI today, I mean, seriously, you have to be perverse to do that. I'm using VI every day because I'm, you know, on a command line, when I want to open a file, I won't start Eclipse. That would be stupid. I use VI, but it's an editor. It's not an IDE. IDE brings you color syntaxing, debugging, facilities to rename things. I mean, renaming a global variable with an IDE is a breeze. Doing it with VI, nightmare. Be sure that it under your build system. It makes no sense to have an IDE where you can't import your Maven build or your Gradle build in one shot. Eclipse was pretty harsh before that, but now it's much better. With Eclipse, I can just open my project, my top level project, and it will open everything. It's just a matter of 1 minute. Build tools. I mean, this is not something you want to dig in. It works, don't touch it. And try to use some decent build tools. And now then, it's probably Maven and Gradle, maybe Builder. But please, stop using Ant. It's over. It's too old. It did the job back in 2000. 16 years later, Maven is doing the job. It's doing perfectly well. Be sure that all the team use the same tool, and they have to understand how it works. So you have to educate your team. That's important. But with Maven, the beauty of it, you have one person that breaks the build from time to time, but the other one are just using it. You don't have to be a genius to use Maven. You have to be a genius to create the build, but then you can just call your friends from the Maven project, and they will help you fixing it. Version control. So last 2 weeks ago, I had an issue with Maven, and I wasn't able to manage my site. And I just called my friends, and he fixed it, and that's it. But I don't want to touch it. I have something which works. I don't want to touch it. Version control. It's the same story. Nowadays, you use Git. Stop using Subversion for your new projects. I mean, if you are using Subversion in your project, it's not necessarily a good idea to switch to Git. But the thing is that every newcomer will have used Git. They are not using, and they don't know about Subversion anymore. So you are losing your time expecting people will learn about Subversion. Okay? CVS, it's over for years. IP, how many times? 10 minutes? Okay. Another thing you have to take care of about a big project is IP and license. It's a big project. I mean, you have many code for many different origins, and you have to be very careful when somebody pushes some code into your project that the IP and the license is okay, compatible with your project. And for Apache, for instance, GPL is not an option. For many other projects, yes, that's fine, but you have to take care of the fact that GPL makes your project GPL. So if you are a company and you want to use some GPL code, you have to know that your code is going to be GPL. This is the reason why we don't want to use GPL at Apache, okay? So you have to do your due diligence. You have to check the code. And it's not only checking the license and the IP and the copyright, it's also checking where it's coming from. 4 years ago, a guy tried to push some code into Apache Directory project, and it was a part of a cryptography module. And when it comes to cryptography, I'm always very suspectful. It's very complicated, and you have to very, very careful check where it comes from. So I just pick a piece of code, and I Google it. And bam, of course, I found the exact same piece of code from Sun. The guy just copied the Sun code, changed the variable name, changed the method name, changed the javadoc, but didn't change the structure, and it was just a plain copy. That means if I weren't checking this code on Google, we would have put some Sun proprietary code into Apache. That's something which is difficult to do because you can't Google all the code you get. You have to trust people at some point. Here it was somebody from another project, I didn't know him. That's your due diligence. And it's critical for your project. And it's even more critical for a company. A few years ago, it was 6 or 7 years ago, Apache received a letter from a lawyer from GBoss saying, okay, you are just using some code we wrote, so we please ask you to remove it from your code base. Apache did what? They just checked, and the guy who wrote the code, it was a piece of luck for G, said, no, actually GBoss took the code from me, and no, that's the way it is. I mean, but you have to have a trust. You have to have done your due diligence at some point. And because he has done his due diligence, we were being able to say, okay, GBoss, please, you have to remove this code from your proprietary software. Or at least you should say it's Apache licensed. Okay? So you have a big project. You want people to be easy using it. Write some installers. If it's not an API, of course. If it's an API, an installer does not make any sense. But if it's a big project like Tomcat or even directory, imagine OpenOffice without installer. I mean, it's already difficult to use. if you have to compile everything on your computer, or if you have a 10 pages README that say, okay, you have to do this, modify this variable, and whatever, it's not going to fly. It makes it easy for your people or your project developers to test your project anyway. So write some stuff. It takes some time. It saves a lot of time in long run. Okay, that's why all the technical parts. As soon as you want to transfer the information to people, you have a wiki. And the wiki is a good thing to have because you won't have to explain the same thing over and over and over to the newcomers. Typically, I'm using, for instance, because I wrote some part of the ASN1. ASN1 is a language I explain how to communicate information from one side to another one. It's quite complicated, so I wrote it down everything on the wiki. And even now, when I want to remember how I did it, I go to the wiki. I don't have to take a paper. It's all on the wiki. And if somebody is asking, okay, how is the build working? You just have to say, okay, here is a link. Go to this page on the wiki. It explains how it works. Saves you a lot of time. Okay, I know writing a page on the wiki is painful, but it saves you. First, it makes clear for you because you are not necessarily clear on your mind, and it's clear for the other. Use a mailing list. This is the only way that remain readable forever. If you use a chat, you don't necessarily have a bot that keep a track of all the discussion. Mailing list, it's much better for that. I mean, it's Apache. Apache is all about mailing lists for one single reason. It's only way to get asynchronous communication that remains where you can have a thread, you can follow, etc. So use mailing list. Experiment. That means if you have somebody who has a crazy idea, but you don't want it to be put into the main code, just branch your code. You have a version control system. And let him do your experiment. He can blow everything. That doesn't matter because it's in a branch. And if it works, then you merge the experiment with your main branch. It's extremely useful and it makes people interested because they can do something, they can scratch their itch. That's critical for your project. And last thing about code, you can rewrite your code. If you have 10 years old code, maybe sometime you want to rewrite it. I know when it works, don't fix it, but still, sometimes it's very good to gather the community and say, okay, this piece of code is 10 years old. The guy who wrote it is away from a long time now. We never touched it because it's a bit tricky and it's not very well documented. What do we do? Do we rewrite it? Yes, do it. Be careful, but do it. It's pretty much like language. We don't use Latin or Greek or ancient Greek right now for one reason. Nobody's speaking it. You can also rewrite, for instance, your build control, build system. We moved from ON to Maven 1, and then we moved to Maven 2, and every time it was a huge effort, but it's paying on the long run. Okay? So that was all about code. It's all nothing fancy. It's plain common sense, but it's very good to list all those things to get in your brain. Let's talk about the community right now, because code is one thing. People is much more complicated than code. You can abuse code, you can't abuse people. So, as we said, Apache, it's community over code for one good reason. People are very important. They are the one who are making your project interesting. And the project, sadly, we have a limited lifetime. It's around 77 or 80 years of life, and you are just working for 40 years. So you are not going to be on your project for years and years and years. I'm working on Apache directory for more than 10 years. Well, I'm 52. In 10 years, I will be retired, and somebody will have to take care of the project if he's still alive. So you have to attract new people. And it's quite difficult to do, because first they have to be interested, and then you have to make them understand that it's very interesting to work on the project. So you have to take care of them. And taking care of newcomers is not necessarily, okay, you're a junior, so listen to us. No, it's not the way it works. You don't know where they're coming from. They may have excellent ideas, and they may even be much, actually for me, they are likely to be much intelligent than I am. So that's fine. I really like working with people that are greater than I am because they are going to do the job I don't want to do or I can't do. But I have to be very careful with them. I have to pat them in the back. Okay, you're very smart. That's very good. You are doing something excellent job. be careful here. We have a tricky thing. We have to format the code this way. We have to use Maven. We have to use blah, blah, blah. That's what we call only newcomers. Make them be happy working with you, but make them sure that they are going to use the right tool for the project. Welcome you, their new ideas. They may be a crazy idea, like, for instance, let's stop using Maven. Let's use Gradle. Fine. Maybe it's a good idea to think about it. Okay, you can experiment. Build a Gradle, and we'll see if the Gradle build is better than Maven. If so, we can switch. That's fine. People are coming, and also people that are leaving. And this is more annoying because they are probably working on some very important part of the project. I mentioned the installers. The guy who wrote the installer just left in our project. Now, who is going to do it? You have to find somebody else. And this is where it's a bit complicated because nobody wants to work on installers. Actually, it's quite interesting because it's helped you understand how it works. I mean, and Stefan and me have worked on installers just because Piano was working on installers is not anymore there, but that's fine. It's the way it works. And last thing, you have very, very good people, and you also have average programmers. Especially the young ones, they are maybe bright, but they don't know a lot of things, so they have to be trained. That's okay. And the top guns, you have also to be very careful. Sometimes they can be very disruptive to your project. The worst kind of people is the one who is like a butterfly going in every direction. You have to make them focus on one thing. But you have to do it, you know, in a calm way. Don't slap them in the face. So the key here, that's the life of a project. You have to deal with it anyway because it's going to happen. Another big issue with project, not necessarily an issue, ego is a good thing. As soon as you can leverage it. The thing is that in Apache specifically, you have a lot of ego. I'm pretty sure that if you have just worked in an Apache project, you have people with a very big ego. That's fine as soon as it's not too much because it's like a fuel. If you light it, it burns you. So be careful. And for yourself, try to be humble. And this is quite difficult. I know that. But it's important. At some point, just accept that you might be wrong because most of the time, you are simply wrong. That's the fact. It's not about your person on your project. Users are all very important. They are your customers for Apache project or for open source project. Users are the people that will tell you your project is buggy and you have to fix it. Or there are the people who are going to say your project is very great and they will tell the world about it. Don't insult them on the mailing list. I plead guilty, I did. It's the wrong thing to do, okay? So let's go back to developers. It's important to put some rules. Everybody can't do anything, everything. So if you want someone to deal with installers, say, okay, you are going to be the installer manager or you are going to be the RIS manager. It's very hard with a 1 million piece of code to be able to do everything. It takes too much time. It takes too much knowledge, and you don't have this time, and you don't necessarily have the knowledge. So let people do what they know, and don't interact with them. I mean, don't disturb them. Don't micromanage people. That's going to kill your project. Micromanagement is a plague for a project. That's the key part. Do your stuff. Make sure that everybody is doing your stuff, their stuff. Have a discussion if needed, but keep focus on your part. I say contribution. If you bring some new contribution to a project, be careful. I just talk about the quality and hidden agenda. It's a thing that is important. Some companies are pushing some code because they want your project to do some things that they need. And then they leave. So nobody is maintaining your code, the code they've just dumped. This is pretty dumping code. Try to balance the pros and cons of having some new code and having some code that you can't maintain. Sometimes it's better to say, okay, I won't use it. It's too complicated. We don't have people to maintain. So always ask, from when somebody is contributing some code, who is going to do the maintenance? If the answer is, I am going to do it, probably not a good answer for one big project like that. IP and quality, that's two different things. IP, I talked about it. Quality, that's complicated. Sometimes young guys are pushing some code, it's not very good, but doesn't matter because they have a good idea. It's easier to tell them, okay, we accept your code, but we are going to help you making it better. They will feel empowered. In any case, you have to anticipate the fact that at some point, the code has to be maintained. Check that before adding the code into your thing. 3 minutes. Okay. The key here with people is to be kind. Don't insult people. Try to be, I mean, they are coming to work with you. If it's a company, that's different. And even in company, if you insult your coworker, it's not going to fly in the long run. So be respectful to people. If somebody is not doing a good job, it's not necessary to call them idiot. Say, okay, I would have done it better or this way. And so at some point, if you have a clash, that's okay. But it's because at some point, you never be able to say no, don't do that. And it's important to say no. Even if it hurts, you just can't say no in a kind way. But it's important. You can't do everything. And for that, you need not to be, I'm sorry, it's a BDLF, not BDFL. I have to switch it to later. Benevolent Dictator for Life. It's not fitting big project because as soon as a person who started a project and is a benevolent dictator dies or quit, then your project is probably dying unless somebody else pops up. So it's better to have a kind of everybody is doing this part and we collectively decide what we do. It's okay. This is probably the best way to manage a project. Advertise your project. If you want to have newcomers, you have to do conference, talk like this one, or blog, announce. Good-looking website is very important. And because if your website looks like, you know, a 1980 website, that means your code is probably the same. So it's better having a beautiful website and less beautiful code than the other way. People like beauty. Release often. If you don't release, that means people will think, okay, the project is probably dead. And last thing, it's very good to have a key project that is shining. People get attracted by light, like Butterfly, or they like it. And for Apache Directory, which is a very tired project, you know, it's down into the stack of IT, you don't never see it, we have Studio, which is shining. People like it. And actually, it's something like it is used 5 times more than the server, but because it's beautiful. And this is what you should do for your project. And remember, a big project is like jugglers. You have many people working together, and each of them have many plates running onto a stick. If somebody just quit, or if somebody just stopped turning his sticks, everybody can crash. So this is where it's getting complicated. But it's not impossible. Thank you.
Okay, we have some time for questions.
So just would like to ask you about experience. You have some parts, some sub-projects here in the Apache directory.
Sorry?
You have some sub-projects, some parts. Yeah. What about releases? Do you have an idea to release also separately, or you release always together? Do you have some experience with that?
That's not easy. We try to always release the API first, because it's the base of everything. I probably can go back to... It will be a bit long. Sorry, two minutes. No, we try to have everything independent. The key is that we are using Maven, so every project uses a different version, and you can specify the specific version you want to use in a project. So we can, for instance, release Fortress using an older version of Apache DS and an older version of the API. It works. Apache DS Sorry. I want to go back to the image where I have all... I have a slow computer. I need to buy a new one. Here we are. So we do release, Mina is totally different. It's separated, so now we release it many times. It doesn't matter, we don't necessarily use it for the API. At some point, we may have to fix a bug in Mina, and then just after release a new API, I did that 2 weeks ago, we found a bug into the SSL layer, and we had to fix it and use it in the API pretty much immediately. So I released Mina, and then I released the API. And the other components, for instance, Studio has been released 2 weeks or 3 weeks ago, but it hadn't been released for more than 1 year, during which we had four releases of LDAP API and two releases of Apache DS. Those parts are totally different, and Fortress has a cycle of release which is different. So at some point, it's important to take care of this aspect. If you have a big bunch of releases, like Eclipse is doing, Eclipse is having what's a train of releases. That means everybody has to be ready for a certain date. It's making things very complicated. If you miss the train, then you have to take the next one. And here, if you have many layers, it might be a bit complicated. So you have to juggle with different aspects. It's not impossible. But actually, we have a pretty much separated pieces. So we released the API recently. It's not used for Studio, for instance. So it doesn't matter. It works. You had a question?
Questions?
My question is actually the same.
Okay.
Well, just say some of the parts of the talk I would find controversial, because I work in a project that has 15 million lines, and it's very old project, and so they had their own code for the style of the project, and you cannot just get in, change it, and say, well, start using larger. And there are people that actually use the console still to do their coding, etc., because it's an operating system, and they cannot really pull out a graphic system. And right, the thing is also the standard style that they have is not covered by any of the tools. And there is a tool locally to do that type of thing, the famous indent from the BSDs. But it doesn't cover all the cases and how it has evolved with time. So, well, I think it's ultimately a matter of common sense and whatever works better for the community. And like in the case of my project that is FreeBSD, we moved to Subversion. We every now and then have the discussion about why we should be doing everything at GitHub instead. Not even Git, okay? Git is already old. You should be using GitHub only. Mm. Well, it becomes a political question. And then if you see NetBSD and OpenBSD, they still use CVS, and they have a lot of problem getting people to move to the same tool.
Yeah.
It can become, I mean, getting to the standards of getting people working on the same style and stuff, it can become a problem that can actually split your community very easily.
That's true. But you can do it, if you have split your project in pieces, that's a way to do it. For instance, here, Mina and Fortress are using Git. And the other pieces are using Subversion. At some point, you might want to use Git for Studio. That doesn't matter. It will work. People are just pushing push release on GitHub with all those parts. Okay, we are pushing it back to Subversion for the moment, just because we want to reach a point where we can move it. It takes some time to move things.
Absolutely. And I do find that, for example, for the style, we don't really go into doing huge changes of style for said or right tools that are independent of the rest of the.
That's
of
fine.
The, that's, which is like obvious, right? And also, it also happens, the modularization also happens to work well with licenses. Because there are licenses that even within Apache you can use, even being copyleft, like Cuddle or Mozilla type of licenses. You just have to isolate them, right? And
yes,
that works very well with modularization.
Mm. So,
okay, well.
Thank you.
So, any more questions? No? Okay, thank you very
thank
much.
You.